Hey, welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson, our new podcast. And I'm so excited to have on the line with me Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She is one of the few people in America that actually read the complete Obamacare Affordable Care Act, or Non-Affordable Care Act. And she's a specialist in healthcare policy. But we're going to talk about some bigger things as well. Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me.
So it is a crazy time, unprecedented is what people say regarding this COVID-19 Wuhan virus pandemic disruption that's going on right now. What's your read on data, and what are you seeing on all of that regarding COVID-19?
Okay, so I spent a lot of time before we started talking today going through a bunch of websites and looking through some data. And these are like the official government websites, the Johns Hopkins, that sort of thing. And it's interesting because the number of cases in the U.S., if you took out New York and New Jersey that are off the charts, they're like probably 120,000 between them or something. But if you took out New York and New Jersey, it's more than that, obviously. But the U.S. as a whole would be far less than any other country in Europe. The U.S., if you took away New York and New Jersey, because they're off the charts, the U.S. would be far better off than France, Germany, Italy, you know, those countries in Europe. So as a country, as a whole, we're doing pretty well, and the numbers aren't that big. New York and New Jersey, it's interesting, the question is, why are those numbers so huge? Is it because they're testing so many people as compared to the rest of the country? Did they not do things? Did they not shut down things very well? And let's face it, they didn't shut down their mass transit. I'm not sure when they closed their schools, but they just closed, you know, like little kids going to the park. And let's face it, little kids in a park, it's hard to keep them, or, you know, the equipment clean and stuff. So is it their mitigation efforts that weren't that great? Is it because they allowed, it's such an international place that people were coming in from all over the world and they just flood in there over time? Is that what put them at risk? Is it the mass transit? I mean, who knows? But, you know, the rest of the country is actually doing really, really well. That's my take from what I looked at today. And the other thing, I guess, is it's hard to compare because you never know what that denominator is. You never know how many people really have it because we don't have the testing available. And all the tests, there's like how many different kinds of tests that we have in the U.S., like 3 or 5 different kinds of tests that people are doing, trying to figure out which one is the most accurate. So we don't even know that yet. And in Europe, I've heard some of the first tests that China sent out to countries in Europe weren't working very well. They weren't reliable. So there are a bunch of different kinds of tests with varying reliability. We don't know how many people are really being tested, certainly not entire populations. So the statistics are totally non-diagnostic. You know, it may take 6 months before we have really accurate testing, and then it may be a moot point. Hopefully, it'll be a moot point.
Well, and don't you think that this uncertainty, this unknown, is what is creating so much fear? And then I see a lot of these headlines that I think are really trying to almost put gas on the fire with this and really scare people. And of course, when you have people really fearful, then it's easier to come in and control them. And that's really going to be the defining moment on our politicians, our bureaucrats, and all those interested parties. And the veil will be off on how they actually took this fear, panic. Were they measured? Were they trying to assure people and try to get to truth? Or are they using this to take more and more power that they may not want to give back once we get through this disruption that we're going through right now, Dr. Jill?
Well, you know, that's so much right there. So one thing, when this first started, I had, you know, a bunch of people were calling me saying, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And I was in Iowa when Ohio kind of shut down. And they were, I think, one of the first states to shut down. And it's like, wow, that seems pretty extreme. And my first thought was, what are they not telling us about this?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, okay, one minute you hear it's the flu, one minute you hear it's 20 times worse than the flu. Then, I mean, it's kind of like we're shutting down schools, but nobody has any cases. So it's kind of like, what's going on here? This is kind of wild. Now, that being said, I'm not sure that I disagree with them shutting things down. Maybe they were a little premature at doing it. I don't know. It's hard to, you know, hindsight's 2020. I don't know. The virus itself is scary, yes. People can change their behavior in order to protect themselves because people are going to act in their own best interest for the most part. They're not going to act in somebody else's best interest, typically, although there are certainly wonderful exceptions to that. But typically, people are going to do what's necessary to take care of themselves and protect themselves. So I think at this point, knowing more about how many people may be infected that get mild illness and recover versus hospitalization and, you know, being on a ventilator and death, it's not quite as scary. With the exception of, and we were focusing so much on New York City and New Jersey, and to me that there's something about that that is just like an anomaly. It's weird. It's weird, and I guess we'll have to see if the other states follow. Is that just a leader for the rest of it? And maybe this whole quarantine thing is great. What scares me more is the economy and the effect mm-hmm. that this is having on people, businesses. You know, what's going to happen? Are landlords going to be nice and not make people pay the rent? Are the banks who we bailed out years ago because of their, you know, naughtiness, are they going to be there for us when we were there for them? So I guess there was somebody that said on Fox last night, we're looking for a pause button. Is there some way that we could kind of put a pause on the transactions involved with mortgages, rent, those kind of indebtedness? Can we just put a pause on that for a little bit until we can get stuff jump-started again? And I think that kind of sounds like a great plan if you could figure out how to pull it off. But the economy, to me, is scarier than the virus, I guess.
Well, and it is. It's like
my bottom line.
It's an economic virus. And that's the thing that I've been trying to match up is these different PBIs, politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that were very quick to shut down one business but yet have another that could still exist. For example, I've heard that guitar stores can still be open, but yet on the other side, your craft stores are being closed down. What are people to do while they're holed up in their houses? A lot of people find solace in music. Some people find solace in crafts. So it's like, and you and I have talked about this a lot, that government, socialism, picks winners and losers. So here we have, by government edict or bureaucratic edict, business A gets to stay open and business B doesn't. It just doesn't really make sense. But I find it very hopeful that we are seeing the veil come off on what these PBIs are doing in picking winners and losers. And we will kind of reassess this as we start to move into this next election cycle, Dr. Jill.
Well, and I think it would be a lot worse off if it were the federal government that was being controlled by people who believe in that kind of force, which would be the Democrats. We'd be a lot worse off because then I would see that individual states would not be respected. And say what you will about, you know, maybe New York didn't shut things down in an effective manner to shut down the spread of the virus, but they still had the right to do that. And whoever made that decision can be held accountable in the next election if people are unhappy with that. Whereas,
well,
when you're doing it from a federal standpoint, it's never appropriate for everybody. So, you know, I think Trump is handling it really well, and it's constitutionally appropriate to say the states get to decide what they do. I'm not a heavy hand here. I'm not going to force things, and you know, at this point. So, yeah, I think it's been handled in a pretty good way. Now, what the individual states do, what individual mayors do, you know, that's going to have to be, maybe it'll be challenged in the courts at some point. I haven't heard of anybody really going crazy except for some of these weird arrests in some states of people. But that's really the exception. I think for the most part, it's all guidelines. We're asking you to do this kind of thing. So I really feel like that part has been appropriate, because I think in a lot of ways, a lot of these governors, it's an election year, and a lot of the governors and state officials and so forth are saying, you know, we need to get constitutional, our constitutional legal minds together to tell us what we can and can't do. And I think, I feel like a lot of places are honoring that.
What about this kind of virtue signaling, snitch on your neighbor kind of a thing? We even have that happening here in Colorado, where people may think that somebody else should not be out and about, and they can snitch to the authorities on their neighbor. I find that darn scary.
You know, it's always a balancing act, isn't it? Because it's kind of like you think back to early Maoism with the Red Army of the you know, the young kids that they indoctrinated and then sent out to rat out their neighbors and their parents. Even, I mean, they were so indoctrinated that neighborhood kids in the Red Army would drag out somebody's parents and beat them to death. I mean, it's craziness. So there's always that fork in the road, and then there's the fork in the road where you know, at an airport, if you see something suspicious, you're supposed to say something about it. You know what I mean? It's the anti-terrorist. If you see something suspicious, notify somebody. Versus, like, because I've indoctrinated you, you're going to turn on your parents and your neighbor. So, you know what I mean? Always, so many times, the gray area, let's face it, kind of rules the world, right? I mean, you always have to walk that line where at some point you're going to have to make a judgment call between what's right for you, what's right for somebody else, and what's wrong. And that's what makes us humans. That's why computers and robots, artificial intelligence being what it is, it is not, I don't think it will ever be capable of making those kinds of judgments. Certainly not the way we would want them to be made.
Okay, Jill, but you mentioned we have to make a decision what is right. And in this age of relativism, there seems to be no clear foundation of what is right. And so that's why I think it's important when we're asking these questions about what's going on in this COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption that we're going through right now, is we need to go to the foundation. The foundation would be the Constitution and this vision of the Declaration that everyone has their right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and how those things match up. So when people say to do what is right, in an age of postmodernism and relativism, there seems to be no clear foundation on what is right. We need to go back to something foundational. Your thought?
What's right is always a nebulous, concept, because whose criteria are you going to use? And what's right, it's like in medicine. So I have, you know, I do breast cancer stuff. So if a patient has a suspicious lesion, you know, it's kind of like, well, we're going to do this test, and then we may go down this road. And under these circumstances, these will be your options. Under these circumstances, these will be your options for treatment and so forth. The same thing with the concepts of right and wrong and all of these kind of moral issues. It may depend on the minuteness of the circumstance at that moment as to what can be considered right and wrong, and who's the judge? Who gets to judge that? You know, are we using what God would want and our interpretation of what God would want? I mean, this is a philosophical decision for somebody above my pay grade on the God scale. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I like to think that I want to do what God would want me to do all the time, but it can be so time dependent, moment dependent, circumstance dependent, and then who gets to judge what's right and wrong? Now, obviously, there are some things that are blatantly wrong, but let's face it, our country wouldn't be so divided with left versus right and so forth if it weren't the fact that each side firmly believes that they're right. So that whole concept of right and wrong seems really nebulous. Now, the other thing, you know, the pursuit of, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, which inherently includes property rights, your right to pursue happiness extends only so far as it doesn't impede on or impose on one of my rights. So I think everybody has to remember that. And I think, you know, I feel like in general, people are doing a pretty good job of this. But somebody running around coughing on people in a grocery store, you know, he has a right to run around and cough. But under the circumstances, if he's running around coughing in a grocery store where there are other people around, you don't have a right to impose yourself on their right to stay healthy. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you are. And I think that's going to be, you know, a whole nother conversation, because do we have foundational rights, or is it relative? I mean, that's truly, I think, what the question is. So, okay, so your example of somebody running around a grocery store coughing, well, it's first of all, it's just bad manners. But in this environment, it could actually hurt people. But yet then we see politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that take the power because they're concerned about somebody doing that, and they're taping off playgrounds. And in fact, I saw a sign at there's a golf course in our neighborhood. There's a big sign that says it's being closed by edict of the Tri-County Health Department. Well, you can pretty well stay, you know, 6-10 feet away from another person when you're playing golf. So I see an infringement on rights here that I think it's dangerous, and we're probably not going to really have this conversation until we continue to walk through this disruption and get on the other side of it and kind of look back and see what's going on with that. What do you think, Jill?
You know, I think golf would be the perfect sport for people to be playing. You know, it's like the only thing I'm close to is my ball after I hit it. So it's, you know, it's kind of like you could use like your gimme rule. You just hold your golf club at the end of your arm, and that's, you know, that's going to be more than 6 feet. You're safe. You know, everybody stays a golf club on an extended arm away from each other. You're fine. That's, to me, that's like the greatest sport to be playing right now is golf.
Yeah, well, so we'll look at these people that are in these positions of power, and we'll say, did you use your power and to just tell people what to do, or were you measured in your response, and were you trying to come up with creative and innovative ideas on how we can exist together as human beings during this crazy time? So, but Jill, we had one other subject we wanted to talk about, and that is that you see some positives that are coming out of this COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption. So what do you think is positive? Because some people can't see many positives in this right now.
Well, unfortunately, they're not being encouraged to see any positives. It's, oh my God, all the suicides, you know, if you need help psychologically. And it's like, you know what, you're just planting these seeds of victimhood. I'm so sick of the whole victim thing. One of the great things I'm seeing is people are relaxing. They're finding fun in simple things. You know, there's a whole garage door beer challenge thing. I mean, you watch this and you're like, yeah, these people have been home a long time. They're strapping a beer can to the garage door, the inside of the garage door. They stand there and hit the garage door opener, and then the beer empties into their mouth, like obviously all over their face and everything, as the garage door goes up. I mean, it's like, okay, these people have been really
home. They've been home a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Iowa. You find simple ways to entertain yourself, right? I mean, it's pretty fun. I mean, there's some pretty great humor and some pretty fun stuff coming out of this. People are connecting. You know, you have time in your day. Call your friends. Call your family. Get online and Skype somebody. You know, it's to me, it's kind of opening up a creative side of us instead of the angry side. Because we have been angry at each other over and over and over. And now we have Democrats and Republicans that are helping each other as neighbors, watching out for each other as people rather than as a political label or some political identity group. So I think that's great. And I think, you know, families spending a little more, you know, calm, quiet time together. I see a lot more families walking around here with their dogs and stuff than I have before. And I think that's great. And in some cases, there's going to be a little too much, you know, close contact. You may not want that. But I think that's the exception. So to me, it's kind of like, let's simplify a little bit, reassess your priorities. And I think that that's a really good thing. People get to know each other again. I think there's going to be a huge baby boom when this is over. I think there's going to be a huge baby boom. So then we'll have to address that economically, but it'll be fun when it happens.
They're going to call them, in 13 years, they're going to call them quarantine-agers.
There you go. I love that. Yes. You know, and one of the other things. So we've been taught that, oh, the one world order, this globalist. I mean, you hear those terms thrown out all the time. All that means is there's a very powerful, ever-increasing, very wealthy group of people who believe that, and they've been past presidents and so forth, were globalists. Obama, Clinton, the Bushes, H.W. was the first president to mention the term one world order. So all these people believe that, considering a global economy and that the EU and Europe being one whole entity of all of these countries that joined together, well, I think now we're starting to see why this is why this could never succeed. Having a one single world with one elite group of people overseeing it. That's the idea, is that there's a group of wealthy elite people who know better than all the rest of us. And they're going to unite all the countries of the world, and then they will be the rulers of that world. They'll pick the winners and losers. They'll, you know, be sitting way up here, and we will all be little serfs and slaves down here working for them. So that is what this group of elites, the globalists, that's what they believe they can achieve, and that it will be wonderful for the world. Well, what we're seeing now, and very simply, is that whole thing falls apart when there's a crisis. When there's a crisis mm-hmm. like this, which I think is kind of overblown, but when there's a crisis like this, everybody's out for themselves. Everybody's a nationalist now, every country. Mm-hmm. And what we found out that they reported during the Trump coronavirus task force press conference yesterday, and a reporter brought this up, and I had not heard it. They said, we're hearing that U.S. companies that are making the protection equipment for, you know, the masks and gowns and things are actually selling these things for cash to other countries so that the U.S. hospitals and providers can't get this equipment. It's there. It's being made. It's being produced in the U.S., but it's being sold overseas at highly inflated prices. And that European, like Germany and France and Italy, they're sending people over here in person with bags of cash. They're just handing it over to these brokers that are selling this equipment. And then they take off with our equipment. So that just kind of came to light yesterday. And Trump apparently found out about it like maybe the day before. And he's like, putting the kibosh on that right now. That is not going to happen. But, wow, where's the one world order there? Has the EU has not stepped up? They're not taking care of their countries. So, wow. So what happened to the one world Europe order? It fell apart. China you know, like grabbing this and grabbing that. And China now, you know, owns, it was okay before to have them, to give them all of our pharmaceutical production and vaccine production and everything else. Oh, that was fine when there wasn't a crisis. Now we're finding out, no, this is a problem. This is a real problem. So our little one world order, one world economy seems to work only when it's like universal health care. It's great until you get sick. So the one world order may sound great until there's a crisis, until there's a world crisis. And then who's there for who? No, everybody then is a nationalist, aren't they? They're all watching out for their own country, which they should be. That's the way it should be, and that's human nature. You're not going to change that. If you wanted to change that, what kind of a heavy-handed elite group, what would they have to, what kind of a military would they have to have under their control to control all of the people who are only going to act in their best interest? So to me, and that's why socialism never works. You know, you got a jerk in your neighborhood. We got people hoarding toilet paper. You know, that tells you right there, the fact that people are hoarding toilet paper, that's why socialism won't work. It's a simple argument. All it takes is a couple of jerks.
Okay, so you are seeing this, well, I think a couple of things. Again, the veil is coming off on just what it would be like if, in fact, this whole kind of one world order was in place. And in fact, I know that this has been taught in our colleges and universities, because someone that was very close to me that was studying political science at one of our state institutions was studying political science and made the comment of how great it would be if we had one set of judges that made all the decisions for the world. And I pushed back. I said, did you not think the founders thought it was a great idea to have the Constitution and people have rights and a separation of powers? And the young person said to me, but they would be really, really good judges. This was being taught at one of our state universities, if you can believe it.
Yes, absolutely. And my brother, for instance, we've had our debate several times over the education, Common Core. And he's like, no, absolutely. Every kid should learn the same curriculum. And I said, he's a conservative. And I said, but who gets to decide what that curriculum is? Well, it'll be the basics. So says you. Do you realize what they want to teach us kids, our kids, with sex education at starting in kindergarten? You know, do you understand what they want to teach the people? It depends on what the people who get to make that decision, what they want taught. So I would say when somebody brings up something like that, it's kind of like, well, what if that judge, what if you don't agree with what that judge believes? What if that judge wants to put you in jail? How do you feel about that now? How do you feel about having one judge that he decides what's right and wrong? Oh, he's going to be really smart. Says who? Name one. Name somebody that's so infallible that they could make the perfect decision for everybody. I mean, it's just such a nonsensical argument. I just bring it right down to the bottom level and just go, who do you know? Who do you know that's that smart? One person, just name them. Who do you know right. That's so infallible? You know,
well, and
it's the same thing when people pick politicians. Everybody hated Trump. Well, I don't like him as a person. Too bad. Honestly, if you think that there's somebody out there that's a perfect human being and a perfect public policy person and a perfect leader and a perfect economist, I mean, it's really, no wonder you're always disappointed. You know, you got to pick the person for the job. Who's the best person for the job? I don't care if they're, you know, well, within reason. It's kind of like, wow, how flawed has every single president ever been that we've ever had? And it's just who did a good job with the task they were given, and did they act under our Constitution and in the American people's best interest? And I think Trump is the most infallible with that at this point. He and Reagan, but I think he may even exceed Reagan as far as going by a constitution, surrounding itself with really good people, and not being afraid to buck the system and call out what's happening. I think it's brilliant. Yeah.
It is extraordinary, the things that he is faced with right now. As we get on the other side, though, I want to make sure that we bring back our founding principles of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and honor the Constitution. Jill, let's do this again. This has really been fun. I'm talking to Dr. Jill Vecchio. This is Sounding Off with Kim Munson. But this is a lot of great stuff, Jill. So let's do this again, maybe next week. How's that sound?
That sounds fun. I got nothing else
okay.
going on. You know that.
Yeah, I know. We all have time to read a great book and have a great conversation. So, exactly. Dr. Jill Vecchio, thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Everybody be safe.
Thanks, Jill.